Can you really negotiate anything? Yes, you can. In the world of real estate, negotiations happen as a matter of course. And if you have the skills to prevail, your clients will win every time. Real estate educator Josh Cadillac shares his negotiation secrets with you right now.
You're listening to The Royal Palmcast, the show about all things real estate. From the production studios of the Royal Palm Coast Realtor Association in Fort Myers, Florida, here's your host, Jim Sandville.
Welcome to the Royal Palmcast. I am indeed your host, Jim Sandville, here in the studios of the Royal Palm Coast Realtor Association in beautiful, sunny Fort Myers, Florida. We're here today, as usual, with a special guest, a particularly special guest this week, I must say. We'll introduce him in just a moment, but I want to say hi to our old pal, Jerry. Jerry's over there on the board. What's going on, Jerry Johnson?
Good morning, Jim. Keyword being old, right?
Well...
Now, I'm glad we are off to a pleasant, positive, upbeat start to our 2021. I believe it's our first recording session for the Royal Palmcast this year. Yeah. And really looking forward to, again, once again, we have a killer guest. From what I understand, he is the Cadillac of instructors. But I'll let you elaborate on that as you do the formal introduction.
So that's a pretty good joke, Jerry. That's a pretty good joke.
Thank you very much. And, I feel like it was there.
I guess he's probably never heard that.
that's a new one, right?
Well, the cat's out of the bag. I got to introduce him now. Our guest today is very well known to realtors and real estate professionals, not only throughout Southwest Florida, South Florida, the entire state, and the U.S., and I don't know about internationally, but certainly in the U.S., people know this guy. His name is Josh Cadillac. Welcome, Josh.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Josh is an instructor. He teaches all kinds of things to all kinds of people. He's got more initials after his name than Mr. Campbell, I got to tell you. Have you seen his business card or his email, Jerry?
Not yet.
Lots of initials. So, Josh, we're going to talk today about negotiating. And Josh is an expert on that, and he's got a lot of tips and tricks to share with us about negotiating. And so we can all do it the best possible way with advantage to our client. Josh, first tell me a little bit about yourself. Where are you from and how'd you get into real estate?
Sure. I'm originally from New York. Came down here, spent most of my life in Southeast Florida, though.
Now, by the way, it's a city, right?
New York City.
And what borough?
Brooklyn.
Brooklyn. All right. There you go.
Red Hook.
Red Hook. Yeah, sure.
It's why you don't mention it out loud. Red Hook is described as the armpit of the world.
And now it's a hipster. It's a hipster place.
It is now. Yeah. It is now. It really is. And it's interesting because my father was the single largest landowner in Brooklyn for several years.
Wow.
He had a huge industrial operation up there, exporting vehicles, and really interesting guy.
Oh, okay.
Had a bunch of patents to his name and did really lived a very interesting life.
But you left Brooklyn at some point.
We left because the U.S. used to do this thing called exporting cars, and we stopped, pretty much. And so that business of exporting vehicles pretty much dried up in the late 70s, early 80s. And so we came down here. We had real estate holdings down here. My father was very much had a taste for real estate. Huh. And so I grew up kind of in real estate, both dealing with the portfolio of properties that we had to sell in New York and also coming back down here to Florida and what we were doing here. So it was very much, I'm actually right now taking a second language, and I learned the difference between being a native speaker and learning the language as secondhand. For me, real estate was kind of a native speaker thing. Like I was a lot of time up surprised at things that people didn't know about real estate because, you know, I just grew up with leases and, you know, tenants, and this is just, you know, how life was. And so we came down here, and I was in a bunch of different businesses down here, a lot of food businesses. And around 2007, I had the brilliant idea to open a couple of restaurants, which coming into 2008 shows just how brilliant that was.
Well, who knew?
So, yeah, I lost a lot. I lost most everything, and started again in real estate. And so I built the portfolio of real estate back up again for myself and, you know, several businesses and stay busy.
What year was that you started in real estate?
2010. Yeah, 2009.
Yeah.
So, it's been an interesting ride.
Yeah, and you're based in Miramar.
Miramar. My main office is in Miramar now, yeah.
Yeah, which is down near Miami in Miami-Dade County or Broward.
It's still in Broward, just barely Broward.
Yeah.
And so I was actually in Sunny Isles Beach, which was a very hot market there for a while, for several years. And just the last couple of years, I've been up in Miramar. Back. That's where I've lived all this time, but that's...
But as I said, you spend a fair amount of time away from Miramar. Well, not so much with COVID now, where you're doing a lot of webinars, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Which has been a godsend. I mean, the technology lends itself nicely.
It's nice because in addition to the, there's pluses and minuses, right? So when I have to do a webinar, I'm looking at myself and I'm not seeing anybody else. Maybe the person that set it up from the board is there so I can at least gauge someone's reaction. You know, I want to see if somebody's asleep and drooling on themselves or whether I still have everybody's attention, you know? And so that's been hard. It's actually more tiring to do a webinar than it is to do one live. I mean, my feet like it better because I'm not standing up all day.
Right.
But it's definitely, I miss being with the people. And, you know, getting that, looking at the person and seeing that they didn't quite get what I said and going back and saying it in a different way and seeing them that I got it. Because for me, it's about that. I like to teach because I like to see people understand things they didn't before. That's really what, you know, I mean, there's other things that I could be doing. But I genuinely enjoy doing that thing or saying that thing that maybe helps make somebody's life better from that day going forward.
And you're also an active realtor.
Yep.
You're selling houses.
Still, I still do it. It's still my primary source of income to this point. I mean, I don't take money from my other businesses. They make money, but I don't take money. I reinvest it all and in more real estate. I'm definitely a one basket kind of guy. I think real estate is, I'm super bullish on real estate.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Right. And you're a general contractor too, a licensed general contractor.
Yeah, so it definitely helps with, you know, perspective on buying and things like that. So yeah, it's all part of trying to have this holistic view of the product. Product knowledge is a really important part of any of this. And so it's one of the big things, actually, it's one of the big areas when I train agents that I try to encourage them on and try to give them a different perspective on the product. We in our industry do a terrible job of understanding our product. The reason why I get listings at the rate that I do and I do the business that I do is because I go in there and I can talk about our product. Because as being an investor, as being a person who has to know what's good and bad, what are the tax advantages, what are the issues? I've been real estate rich and money and cash poor many times in my life, so I understand that's a downside. But I also know when the tax bill comes in, it's very nice having that depreciation sitting there and acting against your active income. And so all of these are things that if you're not talking about, I mean, especially where we are today, where we're talking about borrowing so much more money as a country, the inflation that's got to accrue from that and what the benefit of real estate will be to anybody, not just investors. That guy that just bought his first time home, he's much better off than he is having that money sitting in the bank. Because sitting in the bank, he's going to get killed. Owning that home is going to appreciate as that money devalues, and that's going to be a very good thing for him. You're actually making people's lives better on a daily basis.
I want to ask you, bubble. Will there be a bubble soon? It'll come, right?
Well, what is the indicator? I get that asked that question a lot, right? The main indicator of a bubble is if the income to home price ratio gets thrown askew. So in a normal market, and probably not this market because we have a lot of people, I would imagine, in this market as well that come from higher income areas to here, the normal nationwide number is 2.5 to 3 times median income should be median home price. Now, in a market like yours and a market like mine, that number is askew because we have a lot of higher income earners. They earn a bunch of money someplace else, come here. And so that makes that number a little wonky. You know, we have this high-end property that sells that throws the rest of the averages off. But all in all, watching those things is what matters. 2019 was the best income year this country has ever had as far as income growth. It was a very strong year. And 2007, 2008, there were several years in there in a row where the low and low middle class income earners' incomes came up. If I ask, and I do this all over the country, wherever I teach, how is your market doing? It's always the same. Everybody's market, through COVID, because I was teaching classes on COVID, same market. Single family homes on the entry level, the new home buyers up to the, you know, next step up home buyers, they're killing it. The reason is their incomes have gone up. So the ratios really aren't askew to throw off the, to give us the sense that they're in a bubble. During 2008, instead of being 2.5 to 3 times median income, homes were selling at 5, 6, 10 times median income. So we knew that the home prices weren't sustainable. And that's what's different here. I would say to you that I expect home prices' trajectory of growth to slow. And the reason being, there is the word that they liked so much during the bubble, during the 2008, the aftermath was the bubble, the shadow inventory, right? there is some shadow inventory here that we don't talk about because we're always looking at the unemployment numbers. But the number that we're not really taking into account is how many people have lost their businesses, right? These folks are silently suffering, not necessarily on the unemployment rolls, right? But now their homes are going to have to come to market because they can't make their mortgage payments. Now, the question is, why is this different than 2008? The difference is, if you ask anybody, the demand we have, the market demand is so strong right now. Most agents are like, yes, please give us some more homes to sell. So if these homes come to market, these folks aren't going to get 2008, where their home value has fallen below what they borrowed on it. They're actually going to be in a position where their home has appreciated and they should be able to sell at a profit. Mm. Now, the question really is on this is how big that shadow inventory is. And because of the nature of the way Florida's foreclosures laws are, that we have to go through an entire legal foreclosure process, it doesn't bode well for that inventory all hitting the market all at once. Mm. I know it's a very long answer to a very simple question,
it's out there and people wonder, they've been through 2008, 2009. So everyone's kind of wondering, is this sustainable? But your answer is yes.
I think it is, just because of the very low interest rates. Yeah. Federal Reserve is going to hold them through 2023.
Right.
So not only do people have more money, that money buys more. Mm-hmm. It's one of the interesting times on another show I was talking about, that this may be the first time ever where you could say it's a buyer's and seller's market simultaneously.
Interesting.
Because it is a seller's market. The inventory, everything screams it's a seller's market. Right. But you can spend an extra $15,000 for that house and it's going to cost you an extra $2.37 a month because the interest rate is so low. Mm. And here's the crazy thing, guys. If we get to 3-4% inflation, the bank is giving you free money. You're borrowing it at 3%. Mm. So what you're actually paying is less than the rate of inflation.
Yeah.
It's having debt in an inflationary market is really the best place to be.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. I could go off on any number of tangents, but I really want to rein it in and talk a bit about negotiation.
Sure.
You do a class on negotiation. What's the title of your class?
No-Nonsense Negotiation.
No-Nonsense. I once read a book many years ago called You Can Negotiate Anything by Herb Cohen. You ever heard of this?
I have heard of Herb Cohen, absolutely.
Yeah, he was best buddies with Larry King, of all things. Uh-huh. They grew up together. So Larry has a lot of stories about Herbie Cohen. Mm-hmm. But that's not important now, is it, Jerry?
Sure it is.
Okay. Anyway, this book, I'll never forget it. It said, you can negotiate anything. Go into Sears. You want to buy Sears, right? That's how old this book is. You can negotiate the price of a refrigerator. Don't pay what's on the price tag. Do you agree? You can negotiate anything?
Absolutely. One of the things that we don't do a lot of in real estate education is teach the actual tricks to negotiation. Like we think that it's almost kind of dirty if you know the tricks and you use them the right way. And that's the thing for me. Like, I know certain tricks I would never use on a new agent. I just wouldn't do it because, like,
it's not fair.
It's not fair from an ethical. Like, I want to look out for my customer, but at the same time, I'm not going to take and play. Play as hard as I could. It's just like if I was playing with, a little kid and showing him how to play football. I wouldn't flatten him, it's not what I would do. But if somebody's going to do it to me, if I can't defend my customer, I'm sorry, I'm not doing my job. And so I need to know that the tricks and the tools. So with the store, going to Sears or if there was a Sears or someplace like that, you go in and you ask five times for the same thing, different ways. My broker is a master that he did it. He used to get discounts at Dick's Sporting Goods and stuff like that. He'd walk in and say, hey, look, these shoes are $70. What if I was your family member? Could I get it? Or first he'd ask for a discount. Well, what if I was a senior citizen? What if I was a family member? What if I worked here? Isn't there something you can do? And he said around the fifth time, like magic, they'll go behind the counter, they'll pull out a coupon, they'll find some way. And it's interesting because that's how little kids get their parents to do all kinds of things.
Well, I do the same thing. I frequently will, when I buy something, I will say, kind of as a joke, but really seriously, how much is that with my discount?
Yeah.
What discount? I said, well, I'm a new customer here. You have some kind of reward for new customers or AAA, AARP. What do you got? I'll take anything. And I bought a tire, single tire the other day. And how much is that with my discount?
Of course.
And it was $10 off with my discount, as it turns out. So
beautiful.
It's worth it.
There's definitely it's very much social interaction. It's persuasion. And it's really persuading the other side's position that their position is not as strong as they thought it was.
Uh-huh.
And getting them emotionally to buy into the fact that, well, hey, wait a second. You know, maybe what they're saying has some credibility. I'll give you an example of one. This is one that a friend of mine used to do. He used to carry around a policy book. It was handwritten. Handwritten policies for his life. One of the policies was if you had to wait more than 5 minutes for a reservation at a restaurant, the manager had to provide him with finger foods and a drink at the bar.
How does that work out?
I can't tell you how many times this jerk got finger foods and a drink at the bar. He's like, you know, he pulled out the, I'm sorry, my policy is that, you know.
I want a copy of this book.
Write this down. And so, I'm all over it.
And so he does it. And you know, then the manager comes over. Well, you know, sir, we can't do, but look, my policy is, you know, I have a reservation. You told me to be here. This is my time. You know,
he takes out the book.
He takes out the policy book he's got in his pocket. And so, when you realize this, you got to recognize that it's really creating an emotional response. You know, maybe my position isn't as strong. I mean, the manager is like, you know, I'm not giving you finger foods and a drink. That's what his position is coming in, right? And then the position gets softened and softened and softened as he sits there and he, well, you know, it is policy. Well, what do I say to this? And it's really a throwaway line. And this is one of the things I teach in negotiation. There are these throwaway lines. I have a budget. When I say to you, I have a budget, I've tossed a little hand grenade to you that now you have to deal with. It cost me nothing to do that. I didn't. What do I lose by saying I have a budget?
Mm.
Nothing. But now you have to deal with it. And so even with listings and things like that, when I go to get the price to the customer, I give them the information and then I make them defend their price.
Gotcha. We are coming up on a quick break here, Josh. So if you don't mind hanging with us for just a minute, we're going to be right back after a very brief stop.
Hi, I'm Wendy Payton, and you're listening to The Royal Palmcast.
Hi, I'm Officer Phil Mullen with the Cape Coral Police Department, and you're listening to The Royal Palmcast.
Hello, I'm Officer Carl T. Kennedy, and you're listening to The Royal Palmcast.
You buy insurance for your car and for your home. Why not for your business? Hi, I'm Kevin Besser, your Director of Public Policy. RPAC is the political arm of the Realtor Association, advocating for realtors and issues important for homeowners. In other words, insurance for your business. We need your help and support to protect your business and the rights of property owners. All it takes is $20 to insure your business and to protect the rights of homeowners. For more information or how to invest, please contact me at kevin@rpcra.org.
Have you ever wanted to write for a professional production or be on camera reporting on real estate related topics? Are you a member in good standing with the Royal Palm Coast Realtor Association? Well, here's your chance to shine. We're looking for new talent who think they have what it takes to participate in video segments or other media production for the association, upcoming events, classes, special projects, and podcasts. We need members who can provide subject matter, script writing, appear in videos, and more. We rely on professional level commitment, and we're big on deadlines. We need volunteers who can consistently meet or beat deadlines on any project to which they commit to keep our program schedule on track. Although this is purely voluntary, it's a wonderful opportunity to get your name out there and perhaps even build your business. If you can provide topical and engaging story ideas that would be of interest and value to our members, if you're able to submit written scripts regularly and on time, if you're an RPCRA member in good standing who's interested and think you have what it takes, we want to hear from you. Follow us on the RPCRA Facebook page and read your member weekly newsletter for a link to the application and information forms. Once we receive your completed forms, we'll follow up with you. We'd love to see or hear samples of your work on camera, on microphone, or in print. So please be sure to include samples or links when you apply. We may invite you to attend an on-camera audition session in our Fort Myers studio. For additional information, email shows@rpcra.org. Thank you and good luck.
We are back on the Royal Palmcast with our very special guest. His name is Joshua Cadillac, goes by the name of Josh, I understand, as well. So Josh is talking to us right now about negotiation, and he's got some great examples of how people have been successful using various techniques. Josh, tell us what realtors most commonly negotiate, other than price. I mean, that's the big one.
I would say to you that actually the biggest and the most common negotiation that occurs in real estate, realtors don't realize they're actually negotiating. And the most important negotiations, first thing I teach in my negotiation class is the first and most important negotiation that goes on in any real estate transaction is a negotiation for credibility. That is going on from the second you make contact with the customer in any way, shape, or form.
Credibility.
Absolutely. You know, and it goes before I even meet you. I get a marketing piece. You ever gotten a marketing piece from a company and you're like, I'd never work with them?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, right? And so that negotiation for credibility, that being taken serious and being taken as a person they would want to work with, is huge. And most agents don't realize they're in the fight. They'll come to me and they'll complain. My customer said to me, I told them, you know, we walked into this house and they told me, well, you know, Zillow. I said, look, here's the litmus test to know whether or not you're winning the negotiation for credibility. You go show a house, right? There's three other couples looking at the house while you're showing the house. You know your market, you know this market is hot. You come out of the house, you say to the customer, look, you don't say anything more in the house, go outside. We need to place an offer, full price, on this house today, or it will be gone. If the customer says to you, well, I saw on Zillow you should always offer 20% less, you have lost the negotiation for credibility. If your customer comes out and says to you, okay, when can you get the paperwork to me? The customer believes you are the credible source of information. They believe what you say. There are three things, and this is like my research summarized all my classes. I talk about this in every class. There are three things you need to close for real. And what I mean close for real is I don't believe you measure success in this business by closing checks earned. I think that's a false matrix, right? Agents spend way too much on advertising. The way you measure success in is closed customers for life, a person that would never do business with anyone else but you ever again. Because that's a customer I don't have to go out and re-earn. So in the last 7 years, my advertising budget has been nothing. All of my real estate business has come from past business, people just sending me people saying, hey, help these people out. You help me, help these people out, right? And that's how it should be. That should be the goal. Agents don't recognize that as the goal most of the time. And it's the nature of the business. You know, like, I need a closing. I need to pay my light. I need to pay for my car. And they become employees of their real estate companies as opposed to being CEOs of their companies. So the three things you need to close customers for life are credibility. Well, the first one is rapport. Rapport is just simply, I like you, right? And that is something that's ubiquitous in our industry. They talk about rapport a lot. In all the education I've taken, rapport is covered. Credibility, they never really put a tack on it. That's the second one you need, is that credibility. That idea that you need to know the product, because who is the customer and what are they really looking for? They're looking for market expert. Otherwise, they do it themselves. So every time you say something that doesn't put you forth as a market expert, as a person that knows what they're talking about, you're sabotaging the very feelings you want them to have for you, which is, man, I'm lucky to have this person. They really know what they're doing. And the third thing is trust. And trust flies in the face of the perception that there is of realtors in the world, which is that we're out there for our commission. And so to separate ourselves from that, we have to say to them by our actions, implicit in everything that we do, that, you know what, I don't care about the commission. Now, I'm not saying I sit here and cut commission. I don't play that game, right? But I need them to know this commission is what I'm getting paid to be all in for you. If it costs me a little bit of money to do it a different, whatever. If I have to tell you no, don't sell your home right now. It's not the right time. Let's rent it or stay here. Let's find some other answer, because putting it on the market when I have a 3.5 year supply of inventory means it's not a good time for you. And it's more important for me to have you as a customer and a friend for the rest of my life than it is to get this commission. This commission's not worth that to me. And if you can say that and imply that with everything you do, now you have a customer that can't go out and replace you. You're irreplaceable. Where do you find somebody like that? Right? And so understanding that you're in that negotiation from the second you make contact, all of a sudden that changes maybe the way I handle objections. It changes the way that I negotiate. It changes everything that I do, because now I recognize I'm in a fight and everything needs to score points toward that. If it's not, I'm wasting my time.
Gotcha. So if you were to list the top three, you know, do's and don'ts about negotiating, what would they be for a realtor?
Don't try to collaboratively negotiate with a competitive negotiator.
Collaboratively negotiate.
Yeah, so don't. One of the things I mentioned this to you earlier, we were talking, is that in most negotiation classes, they're trying to push you toward this idea of collaborative negotiation, which is great. I love collaborative negotiation. Everybody walks away happy. Everybody gets something. We don't look at the pie. We say, hey, like, how do we make the pie bigger so that everybody gets a piece of pie that they're happy with? Because pie is good. But when you're dealing with a competitive negotiator and you're trying to collaboratively negotiate, you're trying to give to get in a lot of ways. If they're in the business of taking and not giving back, we have a problem. You need a collaborative negotiator on both sides in order to have a collaborative negotiation.
Talk a little bit more about what that means specifically.
A collaborative negotiator is going to be somebody that says, hey, look, I have my customer said they wanted to keep the chandelier in this house, right? But now they just got somebody in, and because it's 30 feet in the air, they're gonna have to scaffold them. They maybe don't want it so much anymore. But the buyer really loves the chandelier, right? So the seller, it's gonna cost the seller whatever. They come up with a deal where the seller doesn't have to keep the chandelier. The buyer maybe gives the seller a little bit of money. The seller's happy they got something for the chandelier. The buyer's happy they got the chandelier they love. The agents are happy because both customers aren't mad at them. Mm-hmm. And everybody goes along singing and running down, holding hands down the street, right? A collaborative negotiation is where you take things that maybe aren't part of the transaction and you either make them part of the transaction or you take terms that are, what I say is in class, we're looking for inequities. We're looking for terms of the deal that both sides value differently. If one side has to have it and the other side doesn't care that much, well, they're having to have it means they may be willing to compensate the other side to get it. And the fact that they don't care about it that much on the other side means they'd be happy to get anything for it.
Mm.
Right? And so finding those inequities, it requires you to be better and more aware. It requires you to ask questions. Okay, well, why are they leaving? When are they going? Is time really a pressure for them? You know, maybe I need a longer closing. I'd be willing to give you a few more dollars for the longer closing because otherwise I have to terminate my lease and that means I'm going to have to pay it to the landlord. I'd rather give that money to you for the house that I want and close in another 60 days.
Mm-hmm.
This would be an example of a collaborative negotiation.
Mm.
If you're with a competitive negotiator, they want the fastest closing time. They want this much money. They don't care. They just want to feel like they won.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, that makes up a great percentage of the negotiations done in real estate. For two reasons, I think. I think that you have some people that that's just how they are, right? There's certain cultures that negotiation is just you're born negotiating. There's other people that feel like they have to fight about everything because they don't think they're really that good. And so that's how they defend their customer in their own mind. They're looking out for their customer by just fighting about every little term. Long story short is if you're going to take and be negotiated with competitively, be prepared, have your skill set and your tools ready to negotiate competitively. If you have the opportunity to negotiate collaboratively, jump all over it because everybody theoretically walks away happier. Mm-hmm. So that
can you give me two more quick points that realtors need to know about negotiating?
I think the throwaway line that we talked about before, having your little throwaway lines that are things that can be used to buy time for you.
Mm-hmm.
A throwaway line is, well, you know, I have a budget. And as I said to you, it's a little hand grenade that somebody just lobbed. You say, I have a budget to somebody. Well, now they have to deal with what you just said.
Right.
You don't have to think about it anymore. It's out of your, you know, you don't even care necessarily what they say. But now they have to deal with what you said. They have to say, I don't care, whatever. Right. But they have to do something. And so having those little throwaway lines is not never a bad thing to do. The third thing I would say is body language. And that's one of the things that I tried to add to my class. We actually have exercises in the live classes back when we get away from Zoom where there's a three-person negotiation, a buyer, a seller, and the third person is just observing the body language of the two parties.
Mm.
And it always blows their mind how much more they see when they're just looking to see what it is they do see. And so one of the things with negotiation, especially if you're dealing with a good negotiator, is recognize what your body is saying when you're not saying anything. Body language is a huge part of that. If you're not aware of it, you may be sabotaging your own position and not even recognize it.
Interesting. What sort of body language should you go for? Whatever makes you look confident, self-assured?
It really depends on what you're going for. I mean, you never want to come off as desperate. Desperate, especially when it comes to listings. If you would, the surefire way not to get a listing is to come off as desperate. I always ask people, you ever been on a date with somebody that's desperate? What are you thinking? Do you have Barry White playing in the back of your head for later on that evening? No. You're making eye contact with the maitre d' flashing Morse code with your eyelids to get me out of here. Right? And so why would we expect it to be any different on a listing appointment? Yeah. Right? We need to take and have this sense of peace in our own mind that, hey, look, if it goes, it goes. If it doesn't, it's okay too. And so you can't think about the light bill coming due. You can't think about the car payment. You gotta sit there and say, hey, look, I am going to bring a good quality of product to this person. And what I bring them is going to make their life better. I'm going to make sure to do good quality work. I have nothing to be ashamed of. I know my product. I know it well. I've committed to do the things to make me exceptional in my business. The cool thing with being exceptional at real estate is it's not hard. I always say the bar in real estate is not something you have to worry about high jumping over. You have to worry about tripping over it. Hmm. I mean, I'll teach a class. There's 8,000 units in 8,000 people in an association. There'll be 105 in a class, right? And that's a big class, right? Mm-hmm. Where are the other 7,900 and something agents out there trying to fake it till they make it? Because unfortunately, the fake it till you make it is a big portion of the industry. Hmm. And I know agents that are 30 years in the business that are still out there faking it till they make it. Hmm. They've seen it all, but they still don't know it well. And so, you know, I always encourage people to be better than that. This is what you do. This is a big portion of what your life's going to be. So by all means, you got to get in there and get your hands dirty and get it.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Josh, I could go on and on and on. You really have a wealth of knowledge that we'd love to tap into. Can I talk you into possibly recording a couple more shows with us today that we can play down the road?
Sure.
Yeah, wonderful. We've got to have more.
We could make a weekend out of this. This is gold. This is podcast real estate gold.
Absolutely.
Yeah, love it. Love it. Now, I do want to get to my favorite part of the program. Now, Josh, this is something we call the lightning round. During the lightning round, we really get to know you a little bit better. I think I warned you about this, yes?
A little bit.
But in any event, most of our guests escape without any long-term ramifications.
Did you have him sign the legal agreement?
That has been executed.
Okay, good.
That has been executed, Jerry. Thank you. Now, you know, in order to play the lightning round, Jerry's got a big part in this because every morning that we do the lightning round, he gets up extra early in Cape Coral and his mansion out there on the waterfront, drives out to Lehigh Acres, where there is a super box on a door at a house where we can't disclose the location. And inside are the official 3x5 game show host index cards that have the questions for the lightning round. Jerry, did you get the questions today?
Well, I have the box, so
it's a super box.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Okay, yeah, I got it now. So,
okay, you got them. Did you open up that box? All right. Last week, you couldn't get into the box. It was rough. Yep. You got the whole deck there? Is that?
That should be everything.
Feels a little light. No, I got them all, Jerry. I've got them all.
Because, you know, it's early morning for me, Jim. I'm not a morning person.
Yeah, I know that. Maybe you should do it the night before, Jerry. I don't know. Just a thought. All right, Josh, back to serious business. This is the lightning round. And we're going to get some soundbite answers from you, hopefully. Don't overthink it. So here's the first one. When and where was the last time you saw snow?
Wisconsin, last 2019.
Not that long ago. Where would you live if not in Florida?
I was just in Cabo and it was pretty nice.
No doubt. Now this is one I'm not sure how he's going to answer, Jerry, this one's multiple choice. You guys, yous or y'all?
Oh, my history would say yous guys, but, I'm probably a you guys person now.
You guys. Yeah. Yeah. Or mainstream.
Had a feeling.
Jerry's a y'aller, aren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah. I say y'all.
Y'all say that. When I worked in Texas, I heard a lot of y'all.
Yeah.
A lot of y'all. All right, what's your guilty pleasure? Something you don't typically reveal.
Well, I always tell everybody I'm a fat kid, so that's board games. I own a tremendous number of board games.
What's your favorite?
Tough call. I own about 600 board games.
Name two or three that you love.
Hansa Teutonica is a great game. I just played one. I'm not a struggle remembering the name. I play a lot of games.
Did you say 600?
Yeah, believe it or not, it's the fastest growing hobby in the United States.
Wow. I think I have like Monopoly, maybe.
Cards Against Humanity, that kind of thing?
Cards Against Humanity would be, yeah, I mean, that's one. It's not, there's way better.
Yeah.
It's like, because when I was maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I got into it. Like, I didn't know anything about it. And yeah. my friend of mine said, hey, you know, please play board games. I said, like Monopoly? And he's like Monopoly is 4 hours of just a war of attrition. So, you know. And it's no, there's all kinds of other stuff. So Settlers of Catan is
oh, yeah, yeah. I've heard of it, yeah. All right, now tell me some of your favorites, your favorite TV show.
What comes to mind is maybe Friends. I enjoyed Friends a lot.
Good stuff. Favorite food?
Stromboli.
Love it. Your favorite chain restaurant?
Which or Freddy's. Both out-of-state specials, but... Yeah,
I was going to say which.
It's WHICHWICH, which is it's like if Subway was really good, it would be like this. So I mean, you know, you get a sandwich and it's interesting. You go in there, there's paper bags that have the different sandwiches on there. You write your name in the paper bag, you mark what you want in the sandwich. They take the paper bag, they fill the order, they put the sandwich in the bag.
Yeah, interesting.
Where do I find which?
There's one in Orlando. There's one on the about halfway between me and Orlando on the East Coast.
Hey, Orlando. Are you listening, which? Because Fort Myers and Cape Coral don't have that.
Neither does Miami. So.
Really? Wow, I'm all over the which
and
next time.
Freddy's is a frozen custard and steak burger restaurant. It's like if McDonald's was good, it would be.
Wow, frozen custard. You love that, don't you, Jerry?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Jerry and I were talking about custard today, how he thinks it's grotesque.
Well, the terminology is all, you know, all the right. Appearance looks decent, but...
all right, back to serious business here. What's your favorite book, Josh?
Tough call. I got to give you a couple. And then I always have to say the good book just because, you know, there's so much wisdom in there just in general. Proverbs sitting there with, you know, any story sounds true till someone tells the other side and sets the record straight. Wish people would think about that before they watch the news. Uh-huh. A great book I just finished was a book called Debunking Howard Zinn. Reminds you that the United States is a pretty good place. And people that maybe think otherwise, maybe they're just not playing with all the facts. And a great book I always recommend, Basic Economics by Thomas Sowell.
Thomas Sowell. Good. Your dream car?
Right now, a 2020 convertible Corvette.
Nice. That's my dream car, too.
Yeah, we talk about the Corvette
that
a lot.
Is mine.
You know, 0-60 in under 3 seconds from a production car at 50, 60.
That's what you came here today in, your Corvette?
No, I came in my Cadillac.
Oh, your Cadillac.
Oh.
What, really?
Oh, boy.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Did you have a license plate that says Cadillac on it?
I'm not nearly that cool.
Wow. Very cool. Cadillac. Now, that was from France originally, the name, right?
The car company is named after the body of water in Detroit.
Detroit.
And so it's the actual shield is the shield of the French family that was a French general that discovered or found the area. So they named the body of water after him. And it's in Detroit. And so the car company was named after
him. So you're a descendant of the French Cadillacs?
Not even a little bit.
More of a Peugeot kind of guy.
No. It's a thing. There's a whole story involving the FBI and World War II.
Oh, geez.
Well, we won't get into that then. Yeah. All right, changing the subject here. Socks with sandals, yes or no?
No, unless it's really cold and I really don't want to put on shoes.
Then you can excuse it. Okay. Who's your personal hero?
My dad, my brother, or recently the one that I've been really thinking about a lot, and not for the reasons you might think, is Zig Ziglar. I'd read something that somebody wrote about how he lived the rest of his life. Mm-hmm. And he said it was written by a young boy that came. And I mean, to me, it speaks because I speak a lot. I know how tired you get between, you know, whenever you get a break, you just want to sit and take a few minutes. Your throat hurts. Everything hurts. This guy's father brings him in to meet Zig Ziglar. And Zig Ziglar picks the kid's arms up and turns the kid all around. And he looks at me and says, you know what? You're a winner. And he said, you know what? At my time in my life, that meant so much to me. And so, you know, the idea of living a meaningful life is really to take and leave a legacy of people whose lives are better because you exist.
Wow, that's nice.
And that's not Zig on stage in front of 10,000 people. That's Zig by himself, just with an individual. So it was ubiquitous. It was consistent, and that's huge.
Good stuff. All right. Do you do any imitations, Josh?
I'm not nearly that cool either.
Not so much. Okay. All right. I hold in my hand now the last lightning round question. You get one bucket list item. What is it?
I'd love to make a circuit through Europe. I'd never gotten a chance to go to Europe and hit those places, Greek Isles, Croatia, you know, obviously the standards, Italy and France. Mm-hmm. Just been too busy and haven't gotten there.
Yeah, my wife and I are, she's Italian, Brazilian. She grew up in Brazil, but her parents are from Italy. And she has an Italian and Brazilian passport. But in any event, we're gonna hit Rome. That's her favorite city, the Eternal City. And yeah.
I had it on for 2020, actually. I had it all planned out. I was 14 days. I was going to go do it. And
It'll get back to normal.
I'm looking forward to that.
It will. Hey, Josh, I want to thank you so much for making the drive from Iramar all the way to Fort Myers today. We really appreciate your coming here. Yeah, we know you're a busy guy, and we're very lucky you were able to squeeze this in today. You got a lot going on. And how can folks get in touch with you if they want to learn more about anything?
If they're interested in the classes I teach, my website for the classes is acecloser.com. And on there is my class schedule of where I'm teaching, when I'm teaching. I know I'm teaching next week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Wednesday and Thursday, I'm teaching my two-day class, which is all day. It's 8 hours each day. Mm-hmm. But if they want to reach me personally, josh@joshcadillac.com.
Sweet. Simple enough. All right. Hey, Jerry, I want to thank you as well for coming to work today, doing your job.
You're welcome, Jim.
Jerry always shows up.
I do. It matters. Showing up matters.
That's right. That's 90% of it. We also want to thank Beata Jones, our CEO, for her support of the Royal Palmcast and our other podcast, which is called Realtor Riff Rap with host Nick Bijelis. And Nick is also part of Realtor's Corner, our YouTube show with Joanna Rowell. And hope you find those on YouTube, on your favorite podcast platform, wherever you get your podcast. That's where you'll find ours. Again, my name is Jim Sandville, and you can connect with us by sending us an email to shows@rpcra.org. That's shows@rpcra.org. And we will anxiously look for it and open it up and see what you have to say about your ideas for guests, new topics, whatever you want to talk
Absolutely.
About.
Absolutely. We're looking for your input.
Input. We love the input. All right. Again, this is Jim Sandville saying thank you for listening from the Royal Palm Coast Realtor Association. Have a great day, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Royal Palmcast. Be sure to listen again each week. Share and subscribe on your favorite podcast app or YouTube. And be sure to check out our sister podcast, Realtor Riff Rap, and our video news show, Realtor's Corner, which can be found on the Royal Palm Coast Realtor Association Facebook page and YouTube channel. For information about sponsorship opportunities for this and other RPCRA productions, email us at shows@rpcra.org. This has been a production of the Royal Palm Coast Realtor Association.